Now calling case number A211665, Michael Bartle versus Terra Mutual Fire Insurance Company and Donley Agency Incorporated.
Thank you for appearing on our Zoom platform today. Each of you will have your 15 minutes for presentation of your case. And as our host indicated, there'll be a splitting of time for respondent counsel. There is a clock that should appear on your screen. Please pay attention to that. Appellate, you will have an additional 5 minutes beyond the 15 for rebuttal if you choose to use that. Each of you, a reminder, introduce yourself before you begin your case and indicate which party you're speaking on behalf of. With that said, if there's no questions, we'll go ahead. And Mr. Neal.
That's correct.
You have the floor.
Thank you, Your Honors. Yes, my name is John Neal. I represent Terra Mutual Insurance Company, who is the appellant in this matter. There are essentially two competing motions in the trial court that are before Your Honors. The first I'll refer to as the Terra Mutual Dr. Bartel motions. There were two competing motions for summary judgment with respect to those parties. And then the second set of competing motions was between Terra Mutual and the Donley Agency. With respect to the Terra Mutual Dr. Bartel motions, the trial court erred first in construing disputed facts in favor of Dr. Bartel that is contrary to Rule 56. The trial court also erred in denying Terra Mutual's motion on the basis that there was not clear, consistent, and unequivocal evidence of an agreement between the Donley Agency and Dr. Bartel to insure a 2006 grain dryer. With respect to the Terra Mutual Donley Agency motions, the trial court construed the term loss within the party's hold harmless agreement to mean only an insurance loss under the terms of the Julian line of cases. The trial court erred in that interpretation. And second, the trial court did not address the term expense as contained in that same hold harmless clause in denying Terra Mutual's motion for litigation expenses in this case. I will point out that that clause does not contain a prevailing party designation in order to award Terra Mutual its litigation expenses in this case. If I may start first with the Donley Agency's competing motions with Terra Mutual, I think those have a little bit more talking points than perhaps the Bartel motion that I intend to address.
Mr. Neal, I'm going to interrupt and ask a question. So there are, by your brief and by your reasoning, there are factual issues that the district court should not have weighed in on and should have let go to a finder of fact.
That's right? Correct. That is
okay,
correct.
So let's say that we agree with you and we send this back and there's a trial on the factual issues and the trier of fact determines that the contract was reformed, the contract between Donley and Bartel. That still leaves your contract, your issue between Terra and Donley.
Correct.
So if the contract between Bartel and Donley is reformed, how does that bear on your contract issue? And which contract is primary? I'm going to ask all attorneys that.
Okay, sure. When you say contract, we're referring to the agency agreement?
Right.
Yes. So there's two clauses in that agreement that are at play here. The first is the hold harmless clause, okay, which in essence states that the Donley Agency agrees to reimburse and hold Terra Mutual harmless for any loss, expense, or damage sustained by reason of any violation of the agreement. And what's key with that clause is it doesn't say any loss that Terra Mutual sustains. It says any loss sustained. And what's key here is Terra Mutual was sued for Dr. Bartel's uninsured loss. That's what prompted this suit. All right. The second clause at issue in the agent agreement is the requirement that the Donnelly agency notify Terra Mutual within 3 business days that it had bound coverage. It's undisputed. And the agent essentially agreed in her deposition, yeah, I failed to notify Terra Mutual of the grain dryer within 3 business days. So in this case, it's undisputed they breached the contract. Donnelly agency breached the contract. The question then is, does this loss, Dr. Bartel's uninsured loss, fall within the scope of the hold harmless agreement? And by the very breadth of that clause, it certainly does. Where the trial court erred is it followed the Julian line of cases, which found that essentially those were based on common agency law, right?
So essentially you're arguing it that for your client, it doesn't matter if the contract gets reformed because Donnelly still has to hold your client harmless?
Yeah, well, we do care about the contract reformation. I don't want to give that impression. But if that is true, that the court reforms the contract, yes, there's 2 things. They need to pay. The Donnelly agency needs to pay for that uninsured loss that Dr. Bartel sustained. That's the grain dryer fire. And the approximate amount, I think, was $85,000.
And Utica, the Arizona Missions insurers, has already paid that, as I understand the record.
That is correct. And they took a loan receipt with Dr. Bartel to proceed with this case. So where the trial court erred in the Julian line of cases is that was, again, that's common law indemnity claims. Here, we're dealing with specific terms of a contract. And what we need to do is look at those terms of the contract to determine whether, in fact, the Donnelly agency had agreed to hold Terra Mutual harmless and reimburse it for this exact loss. And that certainly is the case here. The Donnelly agency raises the argument of causation, which is essentially Terra Mutual would have insured this grain dryer had the agent properly notified them within the 3 business days. So what's really the loss here? You didn't sustain a loss. And the trial court agreed with that. But that's not the issue. The issue is, does the uninsured loss fall within the scope of that hold harmless agreement? And again, given the sheer breadth of that hold harmless agreement, it certainly does. The causation question.
Can we talk about the Julian principle a little bit? I just want to understand how that works it isn't entirely clear to me that the contract was intending to contract around the Julian principle. That may be the effect of it, but it wasn't clear to me that that's what was going on here. So under those circumstances, what would control and why? The contract or the common law principle?
The contract would.
And why is that when it's unclear, at least from the face of the contract, that the parties are intending to contract around this common law principle?
So the term of the contract, it does not state that the Donnelly agency will reimburse Terra Mutual only for losses that Terra Mutual sustains. It states any loss sustained. That, in this case, is Dr. Bartel's uninsured loss. And that stands to reason in an independent insurance agency relationship between a carrier and an insured, or an insurance agency, excuse me. In this situation, my client had no knowledge about the grain dryer. It had no ability to inspect that. It had no ability to reinsure it. It had no ability to collect premiums on it. That accordingly is a risk that that shifted to the agency. And until they notify my client within the 3 business days that there's coverage, that risk is on them, who's in a better position to assume that.
But the other parties say that your client routinely didn't inspect grain bins like this or grain dryers.
The record was, there were not a lot of grain dryers in the past that had been written by my client. Whether they inspected it or not, it's unjustified because my client never had an opportunity to inspect a risk that apparently it got bound to. But in any event, that's immaterial to the issue. The issue is this uninsured loss that the Donnelly agency failed to notify my client about. It agreed it was going to be responsible for that uninsured loss in this case if it failed to notify my client. So regardless of the inspection, the causation issue, that goes to the causation issue, Your Honor. The causation issue is not whether my client would have inspected and written this grain dryer. The issue is, did Dr. Bartel sustain an uninsured loss because the Donnelly agency failed to notify Terra Mutual that it bound coverage? And it certainly did. Dr. Bartel had an uninsured grain dryer due to the agent's own admitted error. That is the error that that Utica ultimately sued my client on. And if I may just refine my argument with Judge Frisch's question, which was, how does it take it outside the Julian line of cases? The language, so the Julian line of cases essentially said that you don't have a loss insurance, you, the insurance company, if you would have written this grain dryer anyway. But the language as it is written states any loss sustained, not just any loss that Terra Mutual sustains, any loss sustained. And in this case, it was Dr. Bartel's loss. And that was the loss that Utica sued my client for. That's why it fits within the scope of the hold harmless clause in this case. That shifted the responsibility from my client to the Donnelly agency to not only reimburse them for it, but to also pay for that loss.
So, Mr. Neal, so if we agree with you and we determine that the summary judgment order was inappropriately granted, so what happens then? You go back to a jury trial? What happens with this case based on the theories that you're presenting?
So, with respect to we're asking the court on the Terra Mutual Bartel motion to reverse and find that there was no clear and convincing evidence that would take it off the table. Those competing motions would be done. There, in essence, would not be any loss sustained by Terra Mutual with respect to the grain dryer. There would, however, be the litigation expenses that my client has sustained in this action. And that is what we're asking to be remanded back to the trial court to determine what those are.
Right. So what you're saying is that if we would reverse a summary judgment, then that part of the action, that determination by the court is done, and the damages is the only thing that continues to have life?
The litigation expenses.
I'm sorry, not the damages, not the grain bin, the litigation expenses.
Yes.
So essentially the case would be resolved and ended under your theory.
Yes. Other than determining, I would submit an affidavit with my litigation expenses, and I'm sure we'd have an argument over whether those were reasonable or not, but that would be the issue at the trial court. And that goes to the second part of, that was our motion to the trial court with respect to the Donnelly agency motions. We asked the court to award us our litigation expenses because there is no dispute that the Donnelly agency breached the contract. My client was thrown into this litigation as a result of that, and they incurred litigation expenses.
Mr. Neal, I don't understand how it would be that first, the reformation of the contract would be over because your very table of contents says that there are disputed facts. And so if there are disputed facts, why doesn't it go back for a trial?
There are disputed facts on Dr. Bartel's motion on contract reformation. Okay. Our argument is when you take all of those disputed facts on their face, there is no clear, consistent, and unequivocal evidence, which is Dr. Bartel's burden. That is a high burden. This court has said that repeatedly. Contract reformation, we don't hand those out. That is where we're asking the court to find that based on those undisputed facts, there is no clear, consistent testimony. We would have a different situation if throughout this entire litigation, Dr. Bartel and Ms. Schmidt, the agent, were consistent in what they said there was an agreement on this 2009 grain handler. And that's not the case. It was completely inconsistent testimony. In fact, the court made findings that the parties were inconsistent in their deposition testimony and had muddled memories. The court even made that finding in there. And so that's the basis for us asking the court to reverse and find in our favor, in which case the contract reformation claim would be over. If I may move to now to that motion regarding Terra Mutual and Dr. Bartel, there are two key disputed facts. Dr. Bartel testifies in his deposition that he doesn't recall whether in fact he informed the Donnelly agency to write this grain dryer. And Don Schmidt testifies, Dr. Bartel told me to write everything on the Delaware Mutual policy declarations, which did not contain the grain dryer. And Dr. Bartel says, I don't know where the Delaware Mutual policy declarations came from. I'd never seen them before. The other key fact is they both agree that this Zitzau appraisal was dropped off in March of 2017. They both testify, we're not sure whether we ever talked again between then and when Dr. Bartel sends his June 5th email. And then the June 5th email, there's no discussion whatsoever of the grain dryer, no indication or instruction to insure it. I see my time has expired. Thank you very much.
And of course, you'll have the 5 minutes for rebuttal. Again, based on my understanding, Mr. Weeding, you are next, and give our marshal a chance to get the clock set for 5 minutes.
Correct, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, my name is William Weeding. I'm representing respondent Michael Bartel.
Hold on 1 minute. I don't see the clock. The clock seems to be frozen at 5 minutes.
Hold on a second. Sure.
All right. Well, now.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. My name is William Weeding. I represent respondent Michael Bartel. Your Honor, there are only two people who have personal knowledge regarding exactly what the party's agreement was in this case. That, of course, is the respondents, Michael Bartel and the agent Don Smith. I would submit it is undisputed that those two people with personal knowledge of the agreement have asserted from the outset, the very beginning of this case, that it was their understanding, it was their intent, and it was their agreement that the agent would bind coverage for all of the farm property that's listed, described, and valued in the Zitzau appraisal. That fact is simply undisputed. I would just call upon the trial court in its sua sponte to review of the record, to review the entire record, and I would submit that that fact is completely undisputed. It's also undisputed that the agent admits that she made an error in preparing the endorsement to add additional coverage to this policy. She admits she overlooked one item on the Zitzau appraisal, and that, of course, was the grain dryer that's the subject of this case. That fact is also undisputed. So given the fact that those two facts are undisputed, I would submit the trial court was absolutely correct in granting reformation in this case as a matter of law and as a matter of equity. And the reason I say that, the law of reformation is very plain. If a written contract does not accurately reflect what the party's agreement was, then the written contract is in essence reformed or rewritten to reflect what the actual agreement was. And it's undisputed what the actual agreement was, that I'm convinced the court will agree with me upon review of the entire record. I would therefore just respectfully submit that based on those undisputed facts, that this court simply affirm the trial court's judgment reforming this contract in all respects. That's all I have, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Merritt, we will need to change the timekeeping mechanism. When you're ready, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Rob Merritt, and I'm representing the respondent Donnelly Agency in this case. The district court correctly determined, regardless of how the eventual outcome on the reformation issue, that the Donnelly Agency should be dismissed from the case. If reformation is not granted, either because Martel did not request the coverage or Donnelly did not agree to provide it, then there's no violation of the agency agreement because there would have been nothing to report to TARA. In that case, there's no violation to support a claim for indemnification. If the policy is reformed, as the trial court did in this case, there is no right of indemnification because TARA has not sustained any loss, expense, or damage, quote, by reason of, close quote, any violation of the agreement. And I think when you compare the language of the agency agreement to the precedents that both the Supreme Court of Minnesota and the Court of Appeals have consistently upheld, the language is identical. The agency agreement provides that Donnelly shall be liable to reimburse TARA, quote, for any loss, expense, or damage sustained by reason of any violation of the agency agreement. The violation alleged here is a failure to inform TARA Mutual that coverage had been bound on this grain dryer within 3 days or in any event before the fire loss. Under the Julian case, using almost the exact same language, the court held that there is no damage attributable to the agent that was realized by the insurer because of the failure to advise the insurer of the risk before the loss occurred. Similarly, in the Norby case, which is cited in my brief, the court held here, as in Julian, no harm resulted to the insurer by reason of the negligent failure of the agent to promptly send in the applicant's application.
So can you, I mean, one of the arguments that the appellant makes is that the Julian principle does not apply when the parties are, when there are parties to an arm's length business transaction, and that the parties have defined their relationship by contract. And so that takes the Julian principle out of play because that is sort of a catch-all when there isn't that defined agreement. Is there some principle of law or some precedential authority that provides that parties cannot contract around the Julian principle?
I have not seen a case that addresses that issue specifically, Your Honor. TARA Mutual has relied on the Art Goebel case, which held that parties can contract around or change the common law by contract. And I don't dispute that issue. My point here is that this contract does not change the common law, at least with respect to this issue of Julian. Julian holds that there is no loss if the insurer would have written the policy if in the absence of the error. This contract says that we're only obligated to indemnify for a loss caused by our violation of the agreement. It's the same under common law or the contract. And the Julian principle, which has been around now for 50 years, says that under those circumstances, unless the insurer can show that its risk of loss was increased in some fashion, that it would not have written the policy had it been properly requested, that there is no loss to support a claim for indemnification. So,
but can you address Mr. Neal's argument that you are defining loss too narrowly and that he's looking at litigation costs as part of a loss that would be covered by the contract?
I guess I have 2 points on that. First of all, if the policy is reformed, as it was by the trial court, that backdates it back to prior to the fire. So Mr. Bartel, it does not have an uninsured loss. His loss is covered by the reformed insurance policy. And as far as litigation expenses, to the extent that TARA Mutual is seeking litigation expenses for refusing to pay a claim under the policy, that just simply makes no sense. Regardless of whether the contract says anything about prevailing party, it would be absurd to allow an insurance company to recover its expenses for wrongfully denying a claim. It just makes no sense. And certainly there's no support for that sort of argument in the in any of the precedents that have been provided to this court.
Do you think there's a fact issue on whether or not TARA would have, since it wasn't given the opportunity to inspect this grain dryer, whether or not it would have insured it?
only in a metaphysical sense. There's no genuine issue of fact here. I mean, they insured this thing after it was repaired. They never requested inspections, at least in the 3 years prior to this application for insurance, never denied coverage for a grain dryer in the 3 years prior to this application. They did not have a policy that said we're going to inspect every grain dryer or every risk we're being asked to insure. They did not request an inspection when the request was made for over $1 million of coverage on grain bins, grain legs, electrical equipment for the grain dryer itself. So I don't think there's a genuine issue of fact on whether this would have been covered. Tara, in fact, admitted in discovery that it's within the class of risks that they insure. They provided their underwriting guidelines, such as they were, for all outbuildings, not specifically grain dryers. They didn't have a underwriting guideline specific to grain dryers. And this grain dryer met all of those requirements that were within the underwriting guidelines. So metaphysical doubt, perhaps, but that's not sufficient to prevail over the summary judgment motion. I think I've pretty much covered what I have. If you have additional questions, I've got 3 minutes left to answer them.
There are no questions, Mr. Merritt. Thank you very much. And
thank you.
We will turn back to you, Mr. Neal. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, thank you, Your Honors. I failed to mention at the outset, it's been a pleasure working with both Mr. Merritt and Mr. Weeding in this case. I want to start first with Mr. Weeding's argument regarding expenses. I just want to point out the hold harmless clause, it states loss, damage, and expenses, or expenses. So loss and expenses shouldn't be tied together. Those are two separate words in the contract. The idea that my client should have just paid this wholesale from the outset, not investigated the claim, and therefore they shouldn't get their litigation expenses because they failed to do that, that's not what the contract says. We look at the contract and we determine whether there was a breach and whether my client's entitled to those expenses, and it certainly is here. It's a township.
Can I just ask you to clarify, are you talking about, when you're talking about litigation expenses, are you also including in that your attorney fees?
Yes. Yes.
I didn't see an attorney fee provision in the contract. I mean, a fee is typically different than an expense. Is there a fee shifting provision in the contract that I missed?
No, expense includes litigation expenses. That's cost disbursement fees. No, it does not separate those three, but this is certainly an expense. I mean, it's expense. Litigation expenses, that's something my client incurred here, significant expenses, and had an obligation to its policyholders to investigate this claim. And it should be entitled to those expenses as a result of the breach. My client wouldn't be put in this position had the agent followed the contract.
That's not before us though, Mr. Neal, is it the expenses that you're claiming? You don't have that before us at this point. That would be if it goes back to district court?
Yes, right, yeah, right. We are simply asking that the court erred in throwing that request out. I mean, that term is different than the term loss, and that's what we requested essentially in our motion for summary judgment was our litigation expenses, and that's what we're asking it be remanded and determined. In that
so claim, then if we did remand it, the district court would have to determine whether or not attorney's fees is included in the expense.
Yeah, because that was never decided by the trial court, right?
Well, and you would agree with me that in most contracts that we review, if attorney's fees are awarded, attorney's fees are mentioned in the contract to Judge Frisch's point.
It certainly would have been more advantageous to my client, but I don't think the term expense dispenses with attorney fees. I mean, litigation expenses typically include your cost disbursements and attorney fees. If this thing just said litigation costs, I would agree that dispenses with attorney fees. But litigation expenses, the big part of any party's litigation expenses almost always are the attorney fees and perhaps your expert witnesses. And that, again, would be a very narrow interpretation of the word expense in this clause. to throw out my client's right to attorney fees here.
But once again, that's not before us.
Right.
If we agree with you.
Correct. The trial court would need to determine that. Right. To Mr. Weeding's comments regarding the fact issues, I will point out the depositions are clear. The parties state that Dr. Bartel dropped off the Zitzow appraisal in March of 2017. Dr. Bartel himself had testified. At that point in time, he never informed the Donnelly Agency to insure those items in the Zitzow appraisal, including the grain handler. He didn't know at that time whether, in fact, he'd be purchasing those months down the road. So there is conflicting evidence in the record as to whether, in fact, he told the Donnelly Agency to, in fact, insure those items in the Zitzow appraisal. Both Ms. Schmidt and Dr. Bartel testify. They don't recall if they ever talked again after the March, after he dropped that off in March of 2017. But what we do know in the record is their next discussion happened on June 5th in an email. And there's nothing in that email indicating that he had requested that those items in the Zitzow appraisal be insured. And so that's where the fact issue is not only what was the agreement, but when was that agreement reached? And that's important because he didn't have an insurable interest in those items until June 6th. And so there is a fact dispute in that respect. Finally, I will just point out the uninsured loss, again, that is what Utica sued my client for. That's why it was put in this litigation. And it wouldn't have been an uninsured loss had the Donnelly Agency not breached its agreement. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you to the lawyers. The matters were well-briefed and very well-argued today. The case is under advisement, and a decision will be issued in the 90-day statutory timeframe. Thank you.